In recent months, it's definitely intensified. But to your, I guess the connection with grief, just you might have hit something in a nail on the head there of the people not understanding when they haven't shared their experience, or people in my case, what I pointed to there, people telling you what you should or shouldn't feel. And I've noticed that with grief, when people kind of tell me, "Oh, you have you tried this?" Or you should be doing this, or oh no, listen, that feeling's going to go soon. Just hang in there, or you shouldn't be feeling this. And it's the same with discrimination. It's like when you voice about being discriminated against, everyone just goes, oh, listen, you shouldn't give it oxygen. You should just move on. Don't hang on to it. Just be free of it, and you'll be fine.
Hello and welcome. My name is Liz Gleason and you're listening to Shapes of Grief. Shapes of Grief is a curation of stories from international guests who share their unique experience of grief. These stories are shared with the wish that you, the listener, may find some comfort, hope, and solidarity, and maybe also the realization that you're not alone in your grief. Each time you listen, please do support the podcast by donating on the website shapesofgrief.com or by becoming a patron on patreon.com. It's a privilege to hold these conversations, and I extend my deepest gratitude to all my guests for showing up in this particular way. It truly is a gift.
Welcome back to Shapes of Grief, everybody. I'm delighted today to be joined by Lord Mayor Hazel Chu. Lord Mayor, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Liz, for having me.
So this,
hi, everyone.
This is a little bit of a different conversation because normally we kind of take our time and we ease gently into the conversation around grief. But today I'm aware we have a time constraint. When you're Lord Mayor, you're very busy. So we're going to dive right in, and we're going to look today at the subject of racism and grief. And Hazel, I reached out to you because I'm aware that you've been subjected to a lot of racism, particularly in recent months, since you've been holding the position of Lord Mayor of Dublin. And your profile obviously is, people are more aware of you and because of your profile. But I'm sure that racism is something that you've been experiencing probably for a very long time. Would that be right?
Yes, but also I like to preface the fact that it's been sporadic growing up. It hasn't been constant, and it's not like I hate this narrative of people saying, oh, she's such a race baiter, or she uses racism as every angle. The thing is, I know for a fact, being Irish, born and raised here, that the majority of Irish people are not racist. They're really lovely. They're really supportive. However, there is a focal minority that's growing, and it's been growing for quite a while. And as we have issues in the country that have raised genuine fears and concerns for people, like COVID, like lack of housing, like lack of employment, then what happens is even when people aren't racist, they latch onto what is being peddled by racist groups, which is, you don't have a job because the immigrants took it, or you don't have a house because a foreigner took it. So that is what ends up being pushed out, and it's unfortunate. So, but yeah, it's been a lifelong learning experience.
And it's fear-based, you know, when you speak there about certain groups saying, oh, we've no jobs because they took it, it's like we're othering. I think the basis of racism or transphobia or homophobia or any of this othering of others is very much there's us and there's them. It's almost like we have to dehumanize people in order to hate them.
Yeah.
Can you speak a little bit about that, Hazel, about the othering that happens and maybe why that happens?
I think in people who are open to discriminating against people, or people who are, well, in this case, racist, the othering to them is, it's never their fault, it's someone else's fault. And then when they're trying to push out the narrative to blame someone else, it used to be the case that they go straight and say, oh, it's that immigrants' fault or blah, blah, blah. But whereas now they do it quite subtly. They raise the concerns of housing, as I said, or jobs, or direct provision centres, for example. And they don't even steer it exactly to groups of people, but they let people then think. And the othering, I think, for most people is because I think a lot of people don't necessarily like the ownership of the responsibility that things either are caused by them or that things just happen. Sometimes shit happens. So you may have spoken to other guests about this on Shapes of Grief, is that I had a best friend who died when I was 29. And this is before, this is why I went traveling. This is why I didn't go down to the bar to practice then. And I went traveling and I took some time out because I was burned out. I spent a long time going, Jane died because of cancer. But I also blamed everything else. It was like if she had gotten proper help or by other people, if this happened, that happened. There's always a sense of it's someone else's fault. And that's fine because that's part of the grief process. And when it comes to, I guess, racism, it's like that with a lot of people. It's someone else's fault because, again, that is, and I'm not associating racism with grief. They're completely different things. But I think in terms of how people deal with certain things and emotions, it's the same. The othering is because it's harder for self-acceptance of something that just needs to be accepted. So, and therefore you automatically go, it's something else's fault or someone else's fault. So, and a lot of times it's no one's fault, Liz. It's absolutely like for me, when it comes in housing and employment, it's the issues of the state. That may be someone's fault, but otherwise, pandemic, that's no one's fault. It's a virus that has gone rampant, and it doesn't matter who you blame or how you think it's immigrants or not. It's not. So, and that's what we need to start understanding. That I'm not saying that certain shitty things happening when people do it, they don't have to take responsibility. I'm saying that there are certain shitty things happening that people, there's no one that can take responsibility, that it just happens. So,
and I think that's really hard for people to digest because there is a similarity with grief. You know, when someone dies, if our child dies, for example, we want to make meaning, we want to find a reason. And for some of us, it's really hard to just accept shitty things happen, people die, bad things happen to good people. It's much easier to go, there's the fault. And then maybe that keeps me safe or keeps me protected if I can blame somebody else. But something, yeah, an angle I wanted to explore with you today, please, is like as humans, one of our fundamental needs is to be connected to people and to feel like we belong. And what is it like to be told because of your ethnicity by certain groups of people that you don't belong? You know, we see this in so many different sectors of society when we're always promoting white heterosexuality, cisgender, you know, and that everyone else is somehow, and males a lot of the time as well, for women, for people who are not white, for people who are not heterosexual. We're often told in all the images we see in the Hollywood movies that somehow we don't belong in there when we don't see ourselves represented.
I saw there was a post by a BBC journalist on Twitter last night which broke my heart. It was her going signing up to a match dating website. And she's disabled. And then when she got the reply was very much, we don't think we can find someone that could love you because of your disability, and it would be hard for us to match. But when we have a special section and brand build up, we'll go and find you then. And if I ever saw like anything that was just so straightforward and heartbreakingly discriminatory. It was that. It was a very clear sign of you don't belong in our society, and to the stage that we can't find anyone to love you in the society, in our society. And
hi everyone, excuse this brief interruption. It's Liz here, and I wanted to tell you about my grief training program. If you are interested in becoming grief literate or grief trained, I've designed a comprehensive online program which you can do at your own pace in your own time. It's been designed primarily for healthcare providers, but we all have a right to grief training and education. So if you're interested, then it's for you too. Sign up today at shapesofgrief.com. Now, back to the podcast.
It made me kind of wonder, and this is the thing, I've been made several times to feel in my life as I don't belong. I've been that kid looking in the mirror where I go, I wish I was a different color. But to see something like that sent to you by a profit organization, I got so angry. I got so angry for the individual, because it was just, and the worst part was, it has come to the stage where we are obviously thinking like that, that profit-making companies or companies that make a profit on finding love for people can come out with bullshit like that. And it's just really, really frustrating, because I thought we had been long past the stage where we are so discriminatory against. It was the type of thing that you would have probably seen in the 50s and went, oh, that's horrible, but it's also a sign of the times.
Whereas, I think their message to her was, when we can find other disabled people, we'll put you all together and you can save each other. Utterly shocking.
It was awful. And it's just, and it goes back to that whole belonging, and that you can't, and recently I chaired a meeting on Monday, actually just gone, a special Dublin City Council meeting on travellers accommodation, because we have been so bad and poor towards the traveller community in the state. We have actively discriminated against them and segregating them. And my closing line was very simple. We either do something about this now and build better accommodation and provide better for our citizens and residents, or we are rubber stamping racism. So, and this is what we need to start, why we need to start talking about these issues, or we need to continue talking about these issues, and we need to talk about solutions as well. We can't just say, oh, well, let's talk about the issues and all have a rant about it. It's the solutions of what we can do. So Monday's meeting was very clear on, these are the top five things you can do when it comes to travelers accommodation to make people not feel isolated, to not make them feel segregated, and not to enable that discrimination. And it will be the same as for that dating website to cop the hell on and understand, this is the top five things you should be doing to make sure that, again, you are not discriminating against people with disabilities. And I don't know how we have gotten to the stage where, in our current day and age, where we are so much better at communication, we have so many platforms and media, that we think putting a message out there like that is okay. And when we see it, we should start saying that it's not okay, rather than say, ah, sure, it's grand, it'll improve in a few years, it'll be fine, so.
This is the key, I think, as well, because for a lot of people, when it's not our lived experience, it doesn't happen. You know, when it's not my lived experience, it doesn't exist. And similarly, on Twitter yesterday, I saw a post from a woman who is a professor and a consultant ear, nose and throat specialist. And she was interviewed by the BBC with a colleague, and her name was given, let's just say, Jane Doe. And his name was Professor John Doe, a consultant ear, nose and throat specialist. Now, they're both exactly the same qualifications. She just had her name. He had all the titles and paraphernalia that went with it. And she called it out very politely, going, this has to stop, you know. And the amount of, well, men, because it's not their experience, who said, you're making a mountain out of a molehill. It was just a back office mistake, and this doesn't happen. But the truth is, it happens all the time, you know? And I think we need to, I think any of us, you know, maybe women get it a little bit because we experience misogyny. So it's like, okay, well, if I can apply that to something else, you know, we can begin to empathize and imagine what it's like. You know, you mentioned fat shaming once in an interview I saw in. And it's again, unless you've been the recipient of fat shaming, you don't believe it's a thing, you know? And so this brings me to my point, and I do have one, that it's not enough not to just be, well, I don't fat shame, or I'm not racist, or I'm not homophobic. We have to actively be anti-racist and anti-homophobic. So would you speak a little bit about why that is so important, Hazel?
So I always used to get told, oh yeah, it's so horrible this is happening to you. I would never do that. But then there were always one or two instances with people who claimed they would never do that, that they would have seen something like that happen. Actually, there were actually one person who said, oh, I've seen that happen before. It's absolutely awful when they come out with names like that. And I was once in, the story was that the person was once in a restaurant where they heard it right in the table next to them of someone being racially abused. And he goes, it's absolutely awful, isn't it? I don't condone that at all. And I remember saying to the person, did you tell them to stop? And they just went, no, it's none of my business. And I said, well, this is the thing. You're currently making a comment about how it's not right. And you know it's not right. And you yourself won't condone it. And however, you're not willing to step in. And I'm not telling everyone to go and be a busybody kind of interfering in everyone's business. But equally, if you see a child being beaten in a shop, if you see a wife being beaten in a shop, or if you see someone of color being beaten in a shop, that if you don't want to go in and step in and stop the person because you think there's harm there that may be caused to you, the least you're going to do is call the cops. So like on any human level, you're going to call the police and you're going to say, well, listen, this is not right. And I'm going to, and that's what I mean by there is no innocent bystander when it comes to discrimination, when it comes to abuse of any sort, because you're either helping to tackle the problem and solve the issues that we have in society, or you could become part of it. I'm not saying that you're part of it by being, you're contributing to it, absolutely not. But your lack of willingness makes it almost like you're okay with it. And it's not saying that you're a contributor, but it's saying that you are not helping towards fixing the problem. And if you're not helping towards fixing the problem, then how are we ever going to get this problem fixed? Because a lot of people kind of would always go, oh no, that's not an issue of mine, or that's not my business to interfere with. But the fact remains, every one of us is part of a community and part of society. And we don't get to claim the ones that we're happy we don't get to claim which rules that we're happy to abide to and which ones we're not. If you're part of a community in a society that's regulated by rules and guidance, etc., then you're part of it. So unless you really don't want to be part of it, in which case, well, here's a little island for you. You can go live there. So
You're colluding. I mean, we collude. If we witness something that's not right and we say nothing, we're part of the problem. We're colluding. We're supporting that system. And I think nowhere have we seen it more clearly than in the States this year with the Black Lives Matter protests and the need for anti-racism, the need to call it out, but also the need to own that we are supporting a system that encourages racism. So how do we start breaking away from those systems? And I think there's a lot of fear, you know, of, well, if I don't support this system and I'm white and I'm privileged and of all the privileges that go with that, what does it mean to me? It's like people think, you know, there'll be no cake for me if I share the cake.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, sometimes it is honestly, people have a fear of thinking it's interfering and making things worse. And if you have that fear, what I would recommend is just make sure you find out, be led by the user as well. A lot of times, a lot of people go, oh, that person doesn't want me to interfere or complain and it's none of my business. But then ask the certain individual that's being discriminated against, whether it's racism or sexuality or religion or gender. Ask them, listen, how are you doing? Do you need a hand? Like, can I, that stuff that's happening to you shouldn't happen. I'm going to go report it. If you don't want me to, let me know. So, and that's the support we need to start building into a society. It's like, it's back to basics. It's almost like school, where if you're a kid and you see another kid being bullied, like, you may not want to be the person that goes to teacher, but you may well have to, because that kid that's being bullied, the last thing that they feel is the sense of worth or sense of support. And it's our jobs to look after each other when it comes to building a society that's functional and working.
Yeah, I think one of the main parallels that I would draw with the grieving process is what can be really painful for people when they've experienced a loss and they're grieving is when other people don't understand it or can't see it, or, you know, maybe think,
or tell you what you should be doing.
Yeah, well, that's a big one. But people kind of go, well, that happened in March 2019, therefore that's something that was in the past. And they don't understand the ongoing nature of grief and the ongoing suffering. And it can therefore be very isolating and invalidating for the person experiencing it. And I'm wondering, Hazel, would you speak to that a little bit in terms of, I mean, it's lovely to hear you say that in general, this has not been your lived experience on a day-to-day basis, but there's been pockets of racism and certainly in recent months.
In recent months, it's definitely intensified. But to your, I guess, the connection with grief, you might have hit something in a nail on the head there of the people not understanding when they haven't shared their experience, or people in my case, what I pointed to there, people telling you what you should or shouldn't feel. And I've noticed that with grief, when people kind of tell me, oh, you have you tried this? Or you should be doing this, or, oh no, listen, that feeling's going to go soon. Just hang in there, or you shouldn't be feeling this. And it's the same with discrimination. It's like when you voice about being discriminated against, everyone just goes, oh, listen, you shouldn't give it oxygen. You should just move on. Don't hang on to it. Just be free of it and you'll be fine. Sometime, and this is, and again, grief is this massive, horrible, dark, and sometimes almost a relief of an emotion that it has so many stages, as we all know, and has so many different layers. And I loathe to compare it to something as shitty as racism. But there are the similarities, as we've discussed in this conversation. But one of the main things I've noticed, and it's not just racism, it's discrimination in general, that with grief and discrimination, it doesn't go away. It comes and goes in different ways. It comes and goes in different levels. Like the grief and mourning of some of the people I've spoken to in this year, from people passing away with COVID, is just, it's heartbreaking. But then equally, the discrimination that I've heard from many people experiencing, from their disability to gender to sexuality to religion to race, in my case, is that there is always seen as a difference. No matter how people accept you or not accept you, there is still that issue there for some. So, and sometimes it may be just a passing off comment, or sometimes it could be much more than that. And again, between the two, it's why I draw the connection, is because with grief, no matter who I've met, if it's 10 years later of someone that they love passing, there's still that sense there. It's just different levels. When someone, again, is different. Their difference, even when someone is not highlighting it for them, they feel themselves, because we're not at a society where it's totally equal yet. And I don't know if we ever will be. It would be great to be. So, but that is the issue, that differences are always taught to be feared rather than celebrated. And until we start learning how to celebrate it, you will always have that horrible feeling and societal kind of negativity towards it. So,
And I agree with you. I don't know, will it ever be resolved? But at the very least, that we can acknowledge it's a problem and it exists means then that it's not an undercurrent that nobody's acknowledging. Mm. And if we do anything today by this short meeting, if we do anything, it's just to acknowledge that there is discrimination, and that, you know, those of us who can and who are in a position of privilege, we need to speak out, we need to call it. And that's already a good first step.
So I thank you for this meeting as well. It's nice to know. And this is the thing, a lot of the case, be it grieving, be it fighting discrimination, it's all about supports and having people like yourselves and other people to be supportive of the various things that we have to face these days is incredible. And that's what we need to do and continue doing. So,
Lord Mayor Hazeltew, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Liz. See you later.
Nice to meet you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Shapes of Grief. This podcast is not a substitute for professional medical or psychological advice. And if your grief is making you unwell, please do see your healthcare provider. Once again, please consider supporting the podcast by donating on shapesofgrief.com or becoming a patron on patreon.com. I rely on your support to keep going. The music is performed by Baka Beyond, especially for the Shapes of Grief podcast. Until the next time, from me, Liz Gleeson, take really good care.
absolutely gorgeous.